September 27th. Young Juliet writes to her mother from her boarding school in London.
My darling mother, I owe you a good long letter this week after last week's scribble. You will have to let me know Boo's new address when he goes to Tidworth, won't you? I wonder if Arthur is moving, and if so, where? I heard that they were forming new base hospitals at Boulogne and Dieppe, so perhaps he will be transferred to one of those. They will have a dreadful lot of wounded after this battle ends. It seems as if news cannot be long coming now. Miss Lacey says that if we win the battle, it will be a splendid advantage to the Allies, but that if the Germans win it, it will leave things much as they are. Madge Heath is captain of the 15ers and 16ers study, and I am vice-captain. We always seem to get together. I am so longing to be 17. I wish my birthday would buck up and come. Officers' dinner is next Saturday. We are going to sing the national anthems of England, France, Russia and Belgium at it, and we are having to practice this evening. The cat had a kitten, and Miss Lacey called it Liège. And when Liège fell, she had it drowned because of its name. I think it was jolly hard luck on the kitten. Much love from Juliet.
October the 10th. Arthur writes to his mother from France.
My dear mother, we are now fully established for about 600 cases in two parts of the town, one at the Parc des Sports for about 250 cases and another in the grounds of the Chateau for about 350. At present we are not filled as other base hospitals are nearer the scenes of action. There are six old Bart's nurses here. Many of our civil surgeons have gone forward and we are none too many now for running the hospital if it gets full. I hope you're keeping well, Mother, and getting cheerful news from the boys. I feel rather despondent about Antwerp's chances. Poor Belgium. What a cruel fate she's suffering. How many people has Badzi sent by now? More, I hope. I see some villages in the south have done very well. The less responsible English press still seems to preach that it'll all be over in a few months. But it can't be. I feel sure 12 months is the minimum. But pray God it may not be at a price. At such a rate of wastage of lives as in the first 2 months, that seems hardly possible. Have you further news of Uncle Fred? With much love to all, from your son, Arthur.
To recap, Uncle Fred was Frederick Meridian, Eugenie's brother. He had lived in Belgium for many years, where he had a business. He was in England when war broke out, but returned to Belgium the next day. On October the 17th, he wrote from Hythe to his sister of his harrowing escape from Belgium.
My dear Eugenie, I was glad to get your letter of the 11th. I had already heard that three of your sons were doing their share in the war, and I'm glad to have all the details of how they're getting on. There was an American in Brussels who undertook for a fee to get parties out of Brussels and take them to where they could find a train to Ostend. We started from Brussels, a party about a dozen on Saturday the 12th September, taking a steam train that ran to Ninove, where no fighting was going on the line. The Germans we met did not interfere with this train. We then packed into a cart bound for Alst and were met by Belgian patriots on the road. When we got there, we found the town in commotion as there had been fighting outside on the road to Ghent and our carter declined to go any further. So we took refuge in a café. Four Belgian soldiers fired down a street close by and killed a German who had come into the town scouting on a motorbike. Then the Belgians blew up the railway bridge crossing the river as it was in the centre of the town. The destruction of window panes by the explosion was very great. I suppose all the windows of some 200 houses must have gone. Thanks to the Burgermeister, we started off for Ghent the next morning by omnibus, which we reached at midday. We passed through two places where the fighting had taken place, and the destruction was dreadful. All the houses were burnt out. It has been the German plan to destroy as much as possible in Belgium. From Ghent, we got on a train to Ostend, and on the Monday I crossed to Folkestone and found all well. I had had no news whatever for 3 weeks. Of course, this war is very fatal to my company. We have such large businesses in most places where they are fighting. We can only wait and see, but it looks very much as if I should have next to nothing left, and the government may not be able to give me much, if any, pension. So far, all is quiet in Brussels, but when the Germans have to evacuate it, they may do much mischief, and we may find our house gone. I left behind in the house our cook, who has been with us for 20 years. She is married to a Belgian. We are living here with Ethelwyn and her baby, and the nurse as cheaply as possible, and so far I am still getting 3/4 of my salary. I should much like to come down to Badsey to see you all, but just now my plans are very uncertain. I'm on the lookout for some work for my company, but we are so cut off, it is difficult to do anything just now. All this coast is full of Belgian refugees, wounded soldiers. I can't imagine how the refugees will be settled. However well off at home, they have only very little money with them, and many people are doing all they can for them. Much love from us all. Hoping you're keeping well. Your affectionate brother, Fred.
October 21st. At Seawood House, May is writing to her sister Kathleen in Sydenham. Their sister Ethel had recently joined the voluntary aid detachment at Abbey Manor Hospital in Evesham.
My dear Kathleen, Wednesday, and your letter still unwritten. Mother had a most interesting letter from Uncle Fred a few days ago, telling how he got away from Brussels. I'm afraid his financial outlook is pretty gloomy. He says the company may not be able to give him a pension at all. Also, he doesn't know when he'll see again the money he had in some Belgian banks. He says they're living cheaply in rooms in Hythe. Father suggested at once to Mother that they had better ask them here for a long stay, Ethelwyn and the baby too. So she wrote to Uncle Fred and Mother to Aunt Florence. I don't know, of course, whether they will come. If they did, I should probably move out of my room. They'd be our Belgian refugees. I've had a lot of children coming and asking for wool to make scarves, socks and belts since Ethel left. They've been making things in the village school, it seems, but have now finished them. So they are coming now for materials which we buy from the Red Cross money we've collected. I've had to get a lot more wool. Our stock was nearly exhausted. I must go out presently and do about 6 village errands. Mother does a good many each day, but that still leaves some for me. What with Red Cross, soldiers' wives, girls' friendly society, old women and other sundries, there is no end to it. I'm glad Jack has joined a volunteer rifle corps. They have formed one here and are drilled at the old school once a week. Tonight, we hear, they're going to do a route march. Some of the older men, George Jones, Stanford, Blake and the others, are quite keen, and I believe 2 or 3 younger men have joined. Last Thursday, they all came to evening service after the drill. I must stop now and go out. Much love from May.
By now, Cyril had left the officers' training camp and had joined the Worcestershire Regiment. His fiancée, Mila, had recently gone to nurse in Birmingham. Cyril was based at Tidworth, from where he wrote to his mother.
My dear mother, I can no longer rely upon my letters to Mila for providing you with regular news of myself. She got sent for quite suddenly in the end and has left you a very small party now that Ethel has gone off. I expect you are sorry she could not get a week or two more just to keep you company. I have had 2 cards from her since she reached the hospital, and she writes cheerfully. No doubt she has written to you by this time. I am very glad she gets a room to herself, as that is a great boon, especially when among a lot of people one doesn't know. She seems to feel her feet rather badly at present. I hope they will harden pretty soon, as it is awfully wearing to have tender feet. There must be some 20,000 troops actually at Tidworth, and we have the Canadians settling in only a few miles away. There is practically nobody in the place except soldiers. The training progresses steadily, but we are dreadfully handicapped by having an old type of rifle for most of the men. They have to be trained to use the rifle correctly in minute detail by constant practice until it all becomes automatic. Otherwise, it all goes to the winds in battle. And these old rifles are so different in make that many of the actions go quite differently. For example, we can't train the men in rapid loading because the system now in use requires special appliances on the rifle, which these old weapons have not got. By the way, who is that Evans that Father mentions as being in the battalion? Is it the boy who lived next door? I hardly realised he would be old enough. Please mend and forward that pair of pants as soon as possible. I want them badly. I have some on that are very grubby indeed and fall into pieces. I shall be ashamed to send them to the wash here, so I'll send them home to be washed. And I think, cut up into floor cloths. Please thank May for the pyjamas and for patching them up. I hope to go on for a bit with what I have, and as one doesn't seem to take pyjamas to the front, I will postpone ordering new ones just at present. Best love to yourself and Father and May from your affectionate son, Cyril E. Sladden.
November the 11th. George's company, the 50th Battalion, had moved to Watford. He wrote to his mother.
My dear mother, this afternoon happens to be fairly free from duties, and I hope to use it by getting rid of at least some of the letters that I owe to many people. It's over a week now since we made our move into Watford, but I have not yet had many occasions to write and tell you of it, and I have neglected those that I have had. We live in the height of luxury here. We are posted in the big club room of the George Hotel and enjoy gaslight, fires, the use of the hotel kitchen, water laid on, etc., etc. In fact, everything just like Mother makes it. The horses are in some of the stables here and some in the stables at the Essex Arms a few yards up the road. I have charge of the latter lot, although I sleep at the George. I've been put in control of the draft horses, and as there have been a change in the course of this war in the constitution of transport sections, which increases the number of vehicles, I now find myself the proud commander of a driving line consisting of 9 carts and 8 wagons. We are not yet fully fitted out, but we shall probably be going off on a jaunt to the victualling yard at Deptford to make up our deficiencies in horse and horse equipment. When we do that, we shall know that it is only a few days before we go. It has been a splendid thing getting our horses into good stables for a while before moving off. They are now in excellent fettle, and we should be enabled to set out with a thoroughly fit lot of horses. The only trouble is keeping them well hardened to exposure, but that is fairly well secured by leaving all doors and windows wide open day and night. It was very nice to receive the little testament you sent me, and it now lies very neatly in the breast pocket of my tunic, where I can easily carry it at all times, and I should be glad to have your gift always with me. Love to you all from your affectionate son, George.
7 months after his wedding to Mary, Arthur was missing her and had asked her to join him in France.
My dear father, as Mary will no doubt have told you, I want her to come out here at once. So far as one can judge anything in campaigning, I'm likely to be at this base for several weeks more, and with not much work. So it is a splendid opportunity for her to join me. If I get moved on later, she might have to return home, but time will show. I hope she'll be able to arrange the best method of travelling. The sea route, if the weather is not very bad, has some advantages, but she can find out best in London, I think. Those of us who are left here are grumbling a bit at our lot, but doubtless later on we shall get busy again, and I don't anticipate an early finish to the war, though our progress, on the whole, is satisfactory. The battle in Flanders, however, is terribly costly, I'm afraid. My best wishes to all the November birthday party. With much love, to all at home, your affectionate son, Arthur.
Four of the Sladden children, Jack, Juliet, Ethel and May, all had birthdays on consecutive days in November. Arthur's wife Mary had been staying in Badsey when she heard that Arthur wanted her to go to France. May wrote to Kathleen to tell her about how Mary received the news.
My dear Kathleen, you must have been surprised at getting Mary back so soon, as I wonder whether you guessed when you got her wire that she was going to Nantes. Isn't it nice for them both? I'm so glad. I do hope Mary will be able to arrange the journey without difficulty. She doesn't seem at all alarmed at the idea of it, in spite of not having been abroad before, and I'm sure she will manage quite well. How excited she was yesterday morning. She got the telegram before breakfast, and she didn't say anything about it at breakfast, as she wanted to tell Mother first. So she sat with Mother after breakfast and told her. Then came along and found me in my room and broke the great news to me. She was quivering with excitement over it. Then she went off and in her methodical way dispatched her telegrams, packed and paid a farewell visit to Mrs. Ashwin and wrote to Mrs. Williams. Father had gone before she told her news, and she did not realise that he wasn't coming back to dinner. He'd gone to Worcester. However, as he expected to be back by 3:12, I told her she would see him at the station, and so she did. He was surprised to see us there, and there was just time to explain and say goodbye. All the Evesham territorials from Maldon are home on leave this weekend. They expect to go to abroad at any time. Ethel and Muriel have been cycling this afternoon to Bidford to see some Seaforth Highlanders who've been parading with the band. They were going from place to place by motor and marching through the towns with a view of assisting recruiting. I didn't think it sounded exciting enough to cycle to Bidford for, but Muriel was very keen to see the kilts, and Ethel was quite willing to go, though on coming back, she said it was hardly worth it. Monday. We have all been up to Evesham to see the territorials off. Ethel and I intended cycling up. However, when Father came down to dinner, he said Mother must go too, and he ordered a motor to be there at 2:10. So we went up in that and went to the office to see them from an upstairs window. Evesham was simply crowded, and flags were flying everywhere. There was nearly 100 men going. They marched from the new drill hall to the market square, where they halted for a speech from the mayor. Then the mayor and the corporation in their robes, Evesham firemen in their uniforms, and the Boy Scouts all followed the procession up High Street, the band, of course, going in front. Ethel and I went on to the station and had a very good view of them getting into the train. We could see Dr. Harry and Henry Burlingham quite well, Mr. Gawk Roger, P.J. Bayliss, Edgar Cull, and a few other Badsey ones who are among them. They look so bronzed and fit, and I should think they were pleased with their send-off. I hope it will be a stimulus to recruiting in this district. We noticed a large number of men among the crowds, and most of Badsey was there. Much love from May.
November 25th. Arthur writes to tell of Mary's safe arrival in France, and also to wish his mother a happy birthday a week in advance.
My dear mother, I'll write you a rather early letter for your birthday. Perhaps it'll reach you before time. Mary arrived safely last Friday, and I was able to meet her at the station. All our plans worked out well, and the journey was apparently quite a nice one. I suppose you heard from Dowlice of a safe arrival. I had in view a little apartment, about 200 yards from the hospital, and on Saturday morning we inspected it and took it over at once. We can hold it by the week. It has all the necessary equipment. Mary makes great strides with her French, and I generally refuse to help her out. She is very well and in excellent spirits. At present, my work is light, and I'm able to see more of her than I do in London. Of course, this won't last very long, and I can hardly expect to be here for more than another month. Anyway, her journey has not been a failure, since we have already had a week together. How long our present happy arrangement will last, it's impossible to say, but it's very good while it lasts. Quite a second honeymoon. With very much love to all from Mary and myself, from your son, Arthur.
December the 2nd. Eugenie also received birthday wishes from her other two sons, George and Cyril. They both refer to Captain Tanner, who was the husband of Ethelwyn, Uncle Fred's daughter.
My dear mother, 4 birthdays in succession were completely forgotten by me until several days after the event. But I don't forget yours so easily. And here it is to wish you many happy returns of the day. I hope the next will be a peace birthday instead of a war one. I'm writing this late at night, by a totally unauthorised light. It will have to be short, because Rivali is not a movable feast. And I find, as has always been my custom, that getting up is a hard task, not improved by late bed-going. I was very glad to see in this morning's paper that Captain Tanner has the DSO. I'm sure it was well deserved. I always fancied him very much from the first time I saw him. Much love, your affectionate son, George.
My dear mother, many happy returns of your birthday. I am sorry this will reach you a day late. I ought to have thought to write last night, but was extremely sleepy and went to bed in good time. I see that Captain Tanner has got his DSO. How pleased Ethelwyn must be. Of course you saw French's compliment to the 2nd Worcesters. We had it quoted in yesterday's orders. The heavy losses in the regiment were evidently not thrown away. Best love to all at home from your affectionate son, Cyril E. Sladden.
And so 1914 drew to a close. Christmas Day found a depleted party at Seaward House. Both George and Cyril had their leave cancelled, and Arthur was in France.
My dear mother, an edict has just been issued stopping all leave in this division, so my application for a special pass falls to the ground. It is very disappointing not to be able to get down to see you, and if we are indeed going off shortly, it is unlikely that there will be an opportunity of getting so much as 3 days before departing. More likely, I should just be able to rush down and rush back again with an interval of a few short hours. I will come down anyway. Everything's to point to an early move, and I've heard several definitive dates given by various tolerably well-informed people. It would have been very good to have continued the unbroken sequence of Christmases that I've spent at home. You may be sure that I shall think of you all, though the all will be a much smaller one, and shall drink a bumper health to you all at the section dinner that we have arranged to have in lieu of those from which army orders have cut us off. Give my Christmas greetings to all friends at home who I might have met had I been able to come down. Very much love to you all, your affectionate son, George.
My dear father, Christmas passed quietly here. We made up a party of 10 for lunch at the hospital, and stayed on there till evening, so Mary got a rest from housework. It was frosty and bright on the 24th and 25th, but now we have heavy, cold rain. The prospect of our being able to close down this hospital gets nearer, but our movements are not yet known. I'm glad enough not to be under canvas just now, and gather that at other base towns, the hospitals are not hard-pressed with work just at the present. With very much love to all, from Mary and myself, from your son, Arthur.
My dear mother, nobody was very elated at having to spend Christmas Day in this desolate place. However, the occasion was suitably celebrated so that one could feel that it really was Christmas. The men had a good midday spread and seemed extremely boisterous. According to established custom, all the officers looked in at the beginning of the meal. We drank the men's health to the accompaniment of much shouting and then retired, leaving them to stuff themselves as much as they pleased. We had our Christmas dinner at 8:30 and had a very good spread, and people were pretty merry, especially some who went in largely for champagne. Our menu was oysters, clear turtle soup, fillets of sole, roast turkey, York ham, plum pudding, mince pies, herring roes on toast, and dessert. Not bad for soldiers, technically on active service. Best love to you all from your affectionate son, Cyril E. Sladden.
It will all be over by Christmas.
But it wasn't. It had barely started. What will 1915 have in store for the Sladden family of Seaward House? We look forward to seeing you all again next year for our second Evening with the Sladdens. An Evening with the Sladdens, Part 3. The cast was Julius, Anthony Miller, Eugenie, Patsy Miller, Jack and Uncle Fred, Robin Neal, May, Jane Neal, Kathleen, Sandra Sparrow, Arthur, Chris Smith, George, Richard Court, Cyril, Terry Sparrow, Juliet, Martha Murray. The narrator was Will Dallimore, and the official voice was Valerie McGann. Directed by Maureen Spinks. An Evening with the Sladdens was a Badsley Society production.